from the year before, but they're related to the year before.
Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Page 31. Lahiri Mahashai, his eyes brimming with tears, said, O Master, by your mercy I understood Sambandha Tattva, and my previous misconceptions have gradually disappeared. Now kindly teach me the Abhideya Tattva. Right? So these previous misconceptions gradually disappearing means he's hearing, he's contemplating, right? He's applying it, so therefore then gradually it goes away, because you want to make it practical. Right? That makes sense, yes.
Does that mean that you have a time where you're in doubt? Or does it mean that it kind of goes back and forth?
It means you may have the misconceptions, but now you've heard what's correct, so then you contemplate that and apply it. So then that removes the... Right? It may be by hearing you can remove. That's good, but still you want to contemplate it and apply it. Because otherwise then there'll be other situations where the same thing will apply. They're saying that's why contemplation is important, because it's always one situation is always changing, so therefore the application is always changing. So there must always be contemplation. Right? So the more about hearing you remove, that's better. It'll be shorter, quicker, as we see here. Basically with Vaishnava Das and Lahiri Mahashai, then very quickly the doubts are removed because by hearing, because there's so much of the practice beforehand. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So then, you know, it's just like if you're doing nice service and you're doing study, then the study goes very well. Mm-hmm. If one's only studying and not doing other services, then it doesn't go very well. Like that. Does that make sense? Because that's the whole thing. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So you hear, you inquire, and you apply. Right? So when those three go together, then it works very nicely. So here we see is, you know, by hearing, then it is accomplished. Otherwise, by hearing, then seeing. You've heard it, then you see others involved. So then you... And if not, then you are involved yourself, then you're supposed to learn. And if you don't learn, that's not good. Yes?
Whereas the contemplation of getting the principle and applying different situations.
Yes, yes. That's why the Puranic form is superior, especially for the Kali Yuga. But in any time, it's very much appreciated. The natural position of the living entity, the story form is more appreciated, because then it's personal, it's applied. While the Upanishadic, then you have the philosophy or Vedanta, you know, when you're dealing with Nyaya Prashtan or with the Shruti Prashtan, you're hearing it, but then you have to apply it to all the various situations. While the Puranic, it already is giving an application in connection to it. Right, and much of the time we see the same thing comes up again and again, so it's applied in many, many different ways. Does that make sense? So then the idea is then you can get more of an idea of how to apply it into your own life. Right? That's the importance. So that's why, you know, right between the, how you say, the Chaitanya Shikshamrita and the Jaivadharma 1, because it's in the Puranic form. It'll be more easily grasped. Does that make sense? So that's why the Bhagavatam is considered the superior Shastra. Yes.
Is it also that the Puranic form has rasa, so we are more inspired?
Yes, you could say like that. Because the other is more intellectual, so that's why the Upanishads and those who are on the path of Jnana Yoga, they can use that to advantage. But the point is others can't. But if you're on the path of Jnana Yoga, then anything you can contemplate. So therefore the Puranic also, it's very pleasant, and from there then you contemplate all the applications. You know, it's just one step is removed. Right? But for the others, without that step being removed, then you don't start it. You know, just like the car doesn't start, you push it. So you show examples of practical living examples. Because in the stories, except for something like this is a novel. So this means the characters have been created by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's based on actually how devotees interact and all that. But the Puranas, those are actually true stories. Those are actually factual stories. One may say, no, but it's an analogy. But the point is Narad Muni did tell that analogy to Maharaj Prachina Barhishad. That's fact. That was reality. That's history. So Purana is history. It means it's actually happened. So that's the advantage. You can't say, oh, it doesn't work like that. No, these are actual stories of it happening. So that's the advantage. So then the Mahabharata, as the essence of the Vedas, it's story form. But there was too much emphasis on the story and not enough on the essence. Right? Means one can gain the essence. Right? If one understands Bhagavatam, one can gain the essence from the Mahabharata. But as a general story, one may not. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then the Bhagavatam then is the perfect Puranic element, in that the balance between the storyline and the absolute truth is such that one will be able to appreciate the absolute truth. That will come out very strongly. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why that's the best. Because otherwise Vedanta Sutra is transcendental. Right? Or the Pancharatra is transcendental. But it doesn't stick as much as stories do. Like that. So that's why it's considered appropriate. Right. So the point is that application is necessary. That's what gives realization. Because by hearing you can understand. By contemplating you'll understand. But only by practicing will you realize. Right? Does that make sense? The armchair speculator is contemplating, but there's no realization. Otherwise, why is he in his armchair? He'd be doing something. Right? And the muda, he's not realizing anything. He's doing something, but he's not hearing. He's not contemplating. Right? Mm. Mm. Okay, Vaishnav Das. So now we're Abhideya Tattva. Devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the only Abhideya, the means to achieve the ultimate goal, sadhya. Right? So only by devotional service can you achieve the ultimate goal. Means other activities will give you goals, but the ultimate goal is only going to, is to get pure devotional service. So only devotional service can do that. So that's real Abhideya. Right? Human life is meant to realize Godhead. So that means actual Abhideya is devotional service. Anything else won't be actually. Right? Means it follows the mechanics, right, of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. But it doesn't actually get you the goal. Just like we were showing, discussing about how Aristotelian, yes. The Aristotelian concept of causation, it has all the elements, but it's only being applied within its reflective form. Right? So it's not actually complete, because it's not the element of devotional service has not been brought out. Does that make sense?
So by substance, he's only looking at the atoms.
Yeah, he's only looking at the mechanics of the world. In other words, the mechanics, like cooking, the cooking technique is the same whether you're cooking for Krishna or not. You know what I'm saying? The ghee still has to be at the same temperature to temper the spices. Right? Whether you're doing it for Krishna or not. Does that make sense? The pan still has to be on the fire. You still stir with the spoon. Not that you put the spoon on and take the pot and, you know, it won't fit in so you can use the handle. Right? You know, it's like that. One may say, but that's pretty bulky. That. No, but if someone attacks you, you can hit him with the pan. You know, so it works. You know, it's good. You understand? So you don't use it like that. The technique is exactly the same. Right? The Mayavadi concept is different. Right? Or the karma concept is different because they're not applied. The knowledge and the activity is not applied. So in either way, through sentiment you think it must be different, or through knowledge you think it must be different. But technique's exactly the same. So that means the mechanics of Abhideya are the same whether it's devotional service or not. Right? It's still going to be the Lord, the living entity, and the material energy. Right? The mechanics don't change. The Lord is there as Brahman. He is pervading everything. The mechanics that'll function, it's His laws that'll deal with it. The living entity is taking part in that. The material energy transforms according to the Lord's laws. The mechanics remain the same. What changes is the consciousness. Consciousness changes, called devotional service. The consciousness has not changed. You're under the modes of nature, so it's called material. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the only abhideya, the means to achieve the ultimate goal, sadhya. Bhakti is divided into three stages. Sadhana, the stage of practice. Bhava, the first awakening of divine emotion. And prema, the mature state of transcendental love. One must first... One must first practice sadhana bhakti in the beginning, which then leads one to the stage of bhava bhakti. When bhava bhakti matures to Krishna prema, it is known as prema bhakti. So there are three distinct areas, because sadhana bhakti means you're performing the sadhana or practice within the conditioned state, the conditioned situation. Bhava, you're practicing devotional service within the liberated state. And so therefore with your spiritual form in the spiritual, with spiritual elements, right? I mean, sadhana bhakti, you're dealing with the external energy. Bhava bhakti, you're dealing with the internal energy. Right? Does that make sense? And so, but the point is one's given that opportunity because the consciousness is higher. Right? You have a material body, material situations. Right? You engage in Krishna service, sadhana bhakti. Spiritual body, spiritual situations. That's bhava bhakti. It's actually a sadhana because it's a practice. But on that level, because it's liberated, it's not necessarily discussed as much as a practice. Right? Because from our situation, it's very elevated. We say practice, we sometimes tend to bring it down. Or elevate ourselves up, you know, like that. So one or the other, we make some mistake. Srila Rupa Goswami has extensively researched this subject in his book, Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which I will now summarize. Right, so now we're going to get a summary of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yes.
Can I just ask one thing? You explained that Bhava Bhakti is spiritual body.
Yes.
So it means that the spiritual body is already fully developed at that stage?
Spiritual body is always fully developed. It's whether you're aware of it or not, or whether you're able to function with it or not. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, you know, you stick it in something in a kind of like a liquid kind of thing with a nice glass bubble, and after a while it grows and gets to the thing, and then they open it up and dry it off, and then they check it out.
So at that stage of bhava bhakti, we are fully
conscious
of our spiritual body.
Bhava means you're functioning within your spiritual form. Just like this. Let's say someone's married and someone's not married. You know what I'm saying? So when you're married, then you function within that environment. You're not married, you don't function in that environment. Sadhana bhakti means you're engaging your conditioning. Bhava bhakti means you're engaging the spiritual form. But it's not prema. This is the part that makes it confusing, because we think spiritual has to be prema. No, you get to prema. You in the association, in the spiritual world, in the association of the eternal associates, then you take on, by practice, take on their mood. Then you, that brings you to prema. Does that make sense?
I was just wondering, this, like, the person is already fully conscious of his spiritual, let's say, position. He can fall down because it is said it's from Baba, but he can still fall down.
Yeah. But you're not on prema. You don't fall from prema. You understand? See, this is the problem, is we think spiritual means only prema, and material means, you know, gross, disgusting, you know, Hiranyakashipu, like that. This is kind of like our, you know, simplistic view of the world. You know, gross demon with, you know, horns and fangs and everything. Or, you know, prema bhakti, you know, floating around and, you know, like that. There's nothing in between. Does that make sense? But that, unfortunately, that's the Hollywood, you know, concept of devotional service. You know. Either, you know, on the top, you got your Academy Award, you know, everyone wants you, or nobody cares. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And you, can we get prema bhakti from sadhana bhakti without passing through the stage of bhava bhakti?
No. Yes.
Does it mean that bhava bhakti is not practiced with this material body?
No, bhava bhakti can be practiced with this body if you're that advanced. But the general thing is that one remembers Krishna at the time of death, therefore appears within Gokul in one's spiritual form, and then from there getting the association of the Lord's associates. Then one develops their mood and moves on to prema. So that's the normal. But if someone's more advanced than within this body, by meditation they can already be in their spiritual form performing activities in the spiritual world. Right, that's the where Prabhupada says that means the normal thing is you go from your practices here to Gokul and then to Goloka, right? Because you have to have prema to go to Goloka. You can be in Gokul and not have prema, but in Goloka there's only prema, right? Does that make sense? That's why you don't fall from Goloka. You can fall from Gokula, right? So now the living entity who is advanced enough that he is performing the activities of bhava sadhana within this body, he may come to the platform of prema through that practice, and then when he leaves his body here, he goes to Goloka, because he already has his place in Gokul. Means, in other words, why do you have to go to Gokul? Right? You have to have a spot. If you just show up in Goloka and they ask, well, who are you? Yeah. Talking to me. You know, it's like, you know, where are you from? What village? Who are your parents? What are you going to say? Right? Because there's no birth there. In Gokul, there's birth. So you're born in this family, here are your parents, that's your house, you're from this village, so when they ask you these things, you have something to say. Does that make sense? So, Prabhupada's mentioned, the rare case, it's possible that someone could go straight from here to Goloka. That's only because they've already been in Gokul by meditation. Or maybe you've done partially meditation, you've gotten partly, you know, through bhava sadhana, when you leave your body, then you'll just appear and continue there, from there. So in any case, these are the three stages. Is that what? You know, so when you see acharyas come down, they go through these stages, but they go through quite quickly. You know, so it's there, because they're already on that, but they come here as a sadhaka. You know, and then Narottam goes and takes a bath, and then he's a prema bhakti. Kind of moves through, you know, a little quicker, you know. Like, yes.
Whereas early in the Chaitanya-charitamrita, there's a verbal prophecy. The Diksha Guru is representative of Sri Madan Mohan, and the Shiksha Guru is representative of Sri Govinda.
Yes.
No proposed statement about representative Sri Gopinath. Is that the prema bhakta, but by association with, you then develop?
No, it's because the point is what the principle is that you have a relationship with Krishna and you're acting within that relationship. That's where the focus is. The experience of prema, that's not where the focus is. The focus is on working to please Krishna. Right? That's what you're trying to accomplish. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that doesn't have a focus. Because what are you going to do with that? You know what I'm saying? That you have, there's elements and you have relationships, you can relate to that. That you make an endeavor that gets a result, you can relate to that. But prema, what you'll relate with. You know. Yeah. So therefore it's not emphasized. Is that something? Yeah.
Is that why sometimes we hear Charis commenting that actually prema is stopping them from serving?
Means no, the ecstatic reactions of prema may stop. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is that because it's an ongoing, it's a natural state of existence. For us, it's now and again you get a little glimmer. But for them, that's the normal state of existence. So within that, then they want to be able to serve Krishna nicely. You know what I'm saying? We work as it becomes more of a goal for us. But the goal is not our prema, the goal is Krishna's happiness. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's the idea, is Krishna's happiness is what we're trying to get to. Right? So it's not so much our goal. And then we'll see later, in later chapters, because this is only fourth, and we have 40 to go, like that. It gets up into the prema stuff, and so, you know what I'm saying? Okay. Sadhana Bhakti has nine limbs, as enumerated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing, chanting, and remembering about the transcendental names, forms, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Sri Vishnu, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshipping the Lord, offering prayers and obeisances to the Lord, becoming a servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything to Him. In other words, serving Him completely with body, mind, and words, constitutes pure devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami has further divided these nine limbs into branches and sub-branches, arriving at a total of 64 practices. Right? So the 64 is coming from these nine. Right? So that's why in the list in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then the nine were included there. But when Rupa Goswami has brought it out in the nectar devotion, it's not as obvious. Right, because there's so many subdivisions that you don't necessarily see them in this way. An important factor about sadhana bhakti that it has two divisions, vaidhi bhakti, directed by the rules and regulations of scriptures, and raganuga bhakti, impelled by spontaneous attraction. It says impelled by, it doesn't say directed by the rules, right? So that's it. One's directed by the rules and one's impelled by spontaneous attraction. But both function according to the rules. Right? Because mechanics are mechanics. That's what we said before. If materialism is just using the mechanics for oneself, and devotional means using mechanics for Krishna, so that means the elements of sadhana, then being impelled by the rules, that's vaidhi, and being impelled by the spontaneous attraction, that's raganuga. Does that make sense? The form doesn't change. Right? People try to make it that the form changes, but all they're doing is making a new form of sadhana. Vaidhi has the nine limbs aforementioned. Raganuga bhakti consists of internal service to Krishna in the mood of the eternal residents of Braja and adhering exclusively to their guidance. So, in other words, the other is you have these nine forms and you follow them. There's rules how you chant, how you hear, how you remember, right? You know, padasevana, how you take care and deal with the Vaishnavas, you know, means, what is this, prayers and obeisances, means there's rules. If you want to become perfect in that, you have to stand up, offer your prayers from the right side of the deity. You can't just anywhere. You're not trying to become perfect in prayers. You offer prayers anywhere because it doesn't matter. It's devotional service. But if you want to do it through that section, you have to offer obeisances properly. You have to, you know, do it from the proper side. All these different things. There's rules. Right? But the point is Raganuga is what is the mood? How do the residents of the spiritual world, how do they render the service? Because they're doing the same things. Right? The 64 items are only items that the devotees in the spiritual world render. But there, it's based on that natural spontaneity. So how do they apply it? Right? That's what you're doing. So you're following. But one is exactly what the scripture says. The other is what the persons do. You know what I'm saying? Just like you've heard about, you know, being absorbed in chanting. And then you see some devotee who's very absorbed in chanting. So you tend to do what he does. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that the rule says, okay, you should sit here like this and, you know, close your eyes like that and jump up and down in the corner like this. Or, you know, these things, those aren't, that's not how you're working. You're working at, he's absorbed, he's successful. So if I do what they're doing, then I could be successful. Right? Mm-hmm. In other words, I want that mood of absorption, therefore I will follow that practice. So I want the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, so I follow their practice. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, adhering exclusively to the guidance, right? So it means without the rules, but it means the rules are being applied by following what they're doing. Does that make sense? In other words, the mechanics stay the same. It's just the mood changes, so therefore how it's approached changes. Yeah. The sadhaka should practice the type of sadhana bhakti for which he is eligible. Right? They're both sadhana bhakti. It's not that the raganuga bhakti is not sadhana. It's also sadhana. That's why it falls within the category. The practices are the same. It's just you're following out of the spontaneous, or you're following because this is the rule. This is what you're supposed to do. That's the only. So according to what is your qualification, then you practice. You know, it's not a matter of you know, there's more prestige in one or the other. Because if you're looking at a prestige, follow Vaidhi. You know? Raganuga means it's spontaneous. Because if it's a matter of prestige, it's not spontaneous. Like that. You don't notice. You know what I'm saying? The person's at some kind of a gathering. And then, you know, everybody's following all the etiquettes, doing everything. And let's say somebody comes that they haven't seen for a long time, very close friend. They forget the whole crowd and might run over there, do something that's not necessarily technically what you do in that crowd. So they forgot about prestige. You know what I'm saying? So they go over, they interact, they, you know, this and that, say that, and then as it calms down, then they start to become aware of the surroundings like that, especially because everybody's staring at them. So then again, they fall back into the rules. You understand? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's... One is eligible for Vaidhi Bhakti when one desires to worship Bhagavan according to the rules and regulations of the Shastra and has not yet experienced the principle of spontaneous attraction in his Atma. Just thinking about if there's anything below this. Right? One is eligible for Vaidhi, when one desires to worship Bhagavan according to the rules and regulations of the Shastra. What happens if you want to worship, but not really according to the rules? Do we actually have to worship?
Well,
is that kind of spontaneity? What is that? How is that?
Maybe whimsical?
Yeah. Okay. But so we can see is that actually Vaidhi is an elevated platform. It's a very pious platform. You know, it's ruled by the mode of goodness.
Described the other one as a disturbance in society.
Yes, it's a disturbance. Yeah. And if and when the sadhaka is inclined towards Raganuga Bhakti, then the guru guides him on the esoteric path of bhajan in Raganuga Bhakti. Footnote 14. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar Devotion. Here is a general description of devotional service given by Srila Rupa Goswami. in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Previously, it's been stated that devotional service can be divided into three categories, namely devotional service in practice, devotional service in ecstasy, and devotional service in pure love of God. Now, Sri Rupa Goswami proposes to describe devotional service in practice. Right. So, in other words, there's been samanya bhakti, means that you've given the overall view of devotional service. Because samanya means just general, right? It's not specific. So, the first five chapters, he's discussing samanya bhakti, all the various aspects, what relates to what, you know, what's the position of bhava, what's the position of prema, sadhana, you know, devotional service, material life, all these different things have been discussed. Right? Sometimes it's thought, because he brings up the topics of Raganuga and Prema, that now you're dealing with that. No, it's still general, because it's the overview of them. There's no detail. Right? He's simply establishing the position of devotional service in all the stages. Then with the sixth chapter, then he's getting into the detail of sadhana bhakti. And then for so many chapters, right? Then he'll give a few chapters on Raganuga, a few chapters on bhava, and then one on prema. Right? So that means then 14 chapters means what? 14? Nine chapters are on sadhana bhakti, right? The overall concept. So specifically vaidhi, but, you know. Yes.
I'm just wondering about this, if and when the sadhaka is inclined towards Raganuga Bhakti.
Inclined means, it means inclined in that it says here, what is it? Spontaneous attraction in his atma.
Yeah.
It's not just, well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the point is it's going to start there.
Yeah.
That it's it means that there is something more like that. But that something more comes automatically. Like if you're not hungry, you see nice food, you know, it can go, well, it looks nice, but, you know, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if you're hungry, then there's all kinds of natural emotions and bhavas that come, right?
Yeah.
So that's what it means. It's just, it's natural.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to ask about it, then don't worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And if you don't have to ask about it, you won't.
So, leave it.
Yeah, in other words, those on Raganuga sadhana, they're not going to ask about it.
Mm.
Right? Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Only those on Vaidhi, they'll ask. But on those Raganuga, they won't ask.
Yeah.
You know, sir? Practice means employing our senses in some particular type of work. Therefore, devotional service and practice means utilizing our different sensory organs in service to Krishna, right? So that's the thing. The senses are engaged in service to Krishna. That's called devotional service. The senses are not used in Krishna's service. It's called sense gratification. Same endeavor. Sometimes devotees make the mistake that, if the senses are engaged, it's sense gratification. And if the senses are not engaged, that's devotional service, right? So if it's a fast day and I'm not eating, that's devotional service. But if I'm honoring prasad because the senses are engaged, that's sense gratification. No, the point is devotional service means engaging the senses in the Lord's service. Right?
Mm.
Right? So, but the emphasis is on the Lord's service. Right? So you want to please the Lord, so you do that through using the medium of the senses to engage. Right? So that's the Abhideya. But if your point is the engagement of the senses, then it's mixed. Right? So you're rendering service, but the element of that fruit of the karma is also mixed in there. So it becomes, does that make sense?
So in that category, usually the sadhaka could be attached to a very specific type of service and he could not do something else.
Yeah, that's there. But I mean, you also have your ability. You have your nature. So the idea is connect yourself to Krishna through your nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're a manager, you manage, or you cook, you know, whatever it is that you do that. So you engage your senses according to how you can best arrange them for Krishna. Right? So that's there. But at the same time, there's also, in the beginning, that interest, because you like engaging the senses that way. So it's the engagement of the senses that's interesting, and you're doing that for Krishna. You understand? So that's mixed. One is you're simply trying to serve Krishna, and this is what you're good at doing for Krishna. Right? That's the Madhyama platform. That's Nishkam. Right? Does that make sense? Some of the senses are meant for acquiring knowledge, and some are meant for executing the conclusions of our thinking, feeling, and willing. Right? So you're gaining knowledge, and then you're applying it. So that's the problem. It's your jnani is basically using the knowledge acquiring senses, but not using the working senses. And the karmi is using the working senses, and not the knowledge acquiring, other than how much it takes to get them to work. You understand? So that's the problem, is that it's not being the emphasis is wrong. Mm-hmm. The balance is wrong. So practice means employing both the mind and the senses in practical devotional service. Right. So there has to be both. That's the mind, there's the contemplation, and the senses are being engaged. Otherwise, if the senses are engaged, there's no contemplation, or there's contemplation, no engagement, then it will be faulty. Right? You won't get the full result. This practice is not for developing something artificial. For example, a child learns or practices to walk. This walking is not unnatural. The walking capacity is there originally in the child, and simply by a little practice he walks very nicely. Right? Similarly, devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the natural instinct of every living entity. Even uncivilized men, like their aborigines, offer their respectful obeisance to something wonderful exhibited by nature's law. And they appreciate that behind some wonderful exhibition or action, there is something supreme. So this consciousness, though lying dormant in those who are materially contaminated, is found in every living entity. And when purified, this is called Krishna consciousness. So in other words, it's just a matter of bringing out the Krishna consciousness. This is what we were saying before. It's already there. It's not that you're putting something. Right? People say it's artificial. No, this is the natural thing. The artificial is the other elements. Right? So the natural is devotional service. So in its impure state, it's varieties of materialism under the modes. In its purified state, it's devotional service. There are certain prescribed methods for employing our senses and mind in such a way that our dormant consciousness for loving Krishna will be invoked, as much as the child with a little practice can begin to walk. Right? Because there's methods how to walk. If the child just sits there on the floor, they won't walk. They have to follow the process. So in other words, the process is there for awakening the Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, if you don't apply it in that particular way, then it may awaken other things. Right? So therefore, you apply it in that certain way. One who has no basic walking capacity cannot walk by practice. Similarly, Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused simply by practice. Right? Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. Yeah. So it's not the practice itself. It means it's important, the practice, but it's not the practice itself.
Is that walking ability, which is...
Yes, the ability. It means, in other words, the inherent Krishna consciousness, that when you apply the practice, therefore it comes out. People say, but this form of devotional service, it's not socially acceptable, so it's faulty. But we're thinking that it's the form that produces the Krishna consciousness. So we'll change to another form, and in this way Krishna consciousness will come out. No, the point is Krishna consciousness is inherent. You follow the process, you draw it out. Because it's inherent in every living entity, it works on all living entities. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, it'll only work on certain living entities. No, it works on all living entities. Taking prasad works on all living entities. You know what I'm saying? So if the kind of prasad you have, let's say, is not very sophisticated, or the presentation is not that much, so if you wanted to present it to someone who's more of a connoisseur, then you wouldn't work. So therefore you decide taking prasad is not part of the process in dealing with connoisseurs. No, it just means it has to be in a more refined form. Right? But eating is universal. Right? So therefore, all living entities, it's inherent that they become Krishna conscious. That's just their nature. Now, due to the modes of nature, then there's a question of this or that. You know what I'm saying? And the fun part is we become, because we identify with the modes, we're attached to the modes, therefore we consider something superior, devotional service superior or inferior based upon our conditioning. Like, oh, the person's an intellectual, he won't appreciate this presentation of Krishna consciousness, right? But now, because knowledge is higher, right, and we're attached to those modes, right? So we will consider that it's a superior position of devotional service, which I'm professing. But because it's not based on Shastra, it's whimsical, therefore it's the mode of ignorance. So actually, that person is actually in a more ignorant position. That's why they have to be dealt with more delicately. You know what I'm saying? Socially, it's easier because they're more refined. But actually, on consciousness, they're actually in a lower state. That's why it's more difficult to talk to someone who thinks he's an intellect than someone who's not. You know, you meet some simple laborer, right? But he doesn't have any kind of, you know, attitude or that. It's much easier to preach to him. Why? Because he follows rules. He follows authority. He knows there's things to do and not do, and he just does it. So therefore, the concept of that there's supreme authority in philosophy is not a problem for him. Though he's not very sophisticated. Right? So it has to be a very simple presentation. But that through that simple presentation, then there's more to be had. But from the other one, it's a more sophisticated presentation, but there's actually less to deal with. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you can purify that intellectual platform, then you have so much, because they can understand so much, they can preach so much, they can teach so much. But it's not that it's they're specifically at an advantage in their conditioned state, especially if it's not Vedic. If it's Vedic, then okay, there's a little bit more of an advantage. That's why the Vedic lifestyle is recommended. Does that make sense? Yes.
Sometimes with intellectuals like that, even a very straight Krishna conscious presentation has a strong effect because they don't feel that they're challenged on their intellectual basis.
Or you have to go, because the point is, if it's presented in its pure state, it's beyond the intellect. It's in a different category. So it's just, that's what, but you have to judge by the individuals. I'm only speaking about those so-called intellectuals who present that the intellectual class of man, as if they're all pervasive all over the planet, you know, and they're the majority, you know, are going to have a problem with Krishna consciousness. The point is if they're actually an intellectual, how do they function in the world? Because most of the world's not intellectual. Right? So, if they have an attitude and everybody is low class to them, then why even bother? But if they've accommodated everybody else, why wouldn't they accommodate a presentation that works with everybody else? You know what I'm saying? If they're actually intelligent, they can discriminate. And if they can't discriminate, they're not actually intelligent. They're so-called intelligent. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. Is that you see, those who think they're intellectuals, they don't deal with others nicely if it's not intelligent, right? But those who are actually intellectuals, they're very kind to people who aren't. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones you take, you give as lead as example. So then they should try to become like that. Does that make sense? There are certain, okay. Similarly, Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused simply by practice. Actually, there is no such practice. When we wish to develop our innate capacity for devotional service, there are certain processes by which, by our accepting and executing them, will cause that dormant capacity to be invoked. Such practice is called sadhana bhakti. In other words, there isn't a practice that will awaken love of God, that creates love of God. It's not created by the practice. But there's practice by doing, it will awaken the innate Krishna consciousness within the living entity. Right? Because these are practices that are akin to what you would do in the woken state. Right? It means the activities of the spiritual world that they perform, those are the ones that you practice.
So you remove obstacles.
Yeah, you remove obstacles. Yeah, doubts.
No conditioning.
Yeah, like that. But it's there, but it's by purifying. Because when purified, this is called Krishna consciousness. Right? Because it's inherent that it's there. Something bigger. There's something more powerful. There's the supreme element. Everybody respects that. Right? Even Hiranyakashipu didn't like to admit it, but, you know, he means otherwise. If he was so convinced that he is supreme, then why would Vishnu be a problem?
Yeah.
You know? Like, Vishnu doesn't have a problem. You know what I'm saying? It's only because the demons bother the pious and the devotees. That's why they're removed. But otherwise, you want to be a big demon and claim you're God and this and that. Krishna couldn't care less. You know what I'm saying? It's not a problem, you know? Does that make sense? You know, Napoleon is there with his army and everything, and then this little 3-year-old kid comes along with the hat on and, you know, the coat, and puts his hand and says, "I am Napoleon," like that. You know, it's like now the army is going to get confused or something. You know, you know, it's not going to, you know, yeah. So even he has that innate Krishna consciousness. But he's trying very, very hard to avoid it. You know. And that's it. It means, you know, if you want to be an atheist, you actually have to work very hard. You have to constantly convince yourself that there is no God, though if you look around, it's obvious something is in control.
That's why they're so wound up.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because it's like
that. Or as many devotees said that leaving Krishna, God, tried to forget Krishna very hard, but they couldn't.
Yeah, no, that's the trick.
That's why we say nobody ever really leaves.
Yeah, yeah. I remember one devotee was telling me, I can't remember if it was him or these two devotees were talking, and they were relating back to when one of them had first come to the temple. And I think it was, they had come and they were making arrangements for a festival like Janmashtami or something. And this one devotee, he was an interior designer. So he was, you know, doing cloth and curtain and all kinds of stuff. And this other person came along, and so they stuck him with him. And then the guest came and was doing something. And then the devotee who was arranging started like laughing. You know, not loudly, but, you know, pleasantly laughing. And so he always wondered why he was laughing. So then this is like so many years later. He's asking, why was he laughing? Was it because, you know, I was doing a bad job or this or that? Or, you know, he says, no, because I was laughing that now you've done devotional service, now your material life is finished, and there's nothing you can do about it. You know. So he was appreciating that. So they both had a good laugh over that. Okay, so that dormant capacity being invoked by doing these activities, it's not the activity that does it, it's that it creates the environment which it can naturally come forward. Now, this sadhana bhakti, or practice of devotional service, may also be divided into two parts. The first part is called service according to regulative principles. One has to follow these different regulative principles by the order of the spiritual master or on the strength of authoritative scriptures, and there can be no question of refusal. That is called vaidhi, or regulated, right? There can't be a... Because Mother Jashoda, it's not that sometimes she feels like serving Krishna and sometimes she just wants a break. So it's always there. So the first point in vaidhi is that this is the rule, you have to follow it. Right? Because that's just the way those on the spontaneous platform do. They have to do it, but they have to do it because of the spontaneity. We don't have the spontaneity, so at least we should do the service. Right? That is called vaidhi, or regulated. One has to do it without argument. Another part of sadhana bhakti is called raganuga. Raganuga refers to the point at which, by following the regulative principles, one becomes a little more attached to Krishna and executes devotional service out of natural love. For example, a person engaged in devotional service may be ordered to rise early in the morning and offer artik, which is a form of deity worship. In the beginning, by the order of the spiritual master, one rises early in the morning and offers artik. But when he develops real attachment, Then he gets, when he gets this attachment, he automatically tries to decorate the deity and prepare different kinds of dresses and thinks of different plans to execute his devotional service nicely. Although it is within the category of practice, this offering of loving service is spontaneous. Right? So the practice of devotional service, sadhana bhakti, can be divided into two parts, namely regulative and spontaneous. Now this definition, this is also, it's given by Rupa, by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So in other words, the spontaneous element is happening, is that you're spontaneous wanting to do service. Right? It's not, you, it means you're supposed to get up, go to Mangalarti because that's what the order is. But then you like to go there because you can go there, you can see the deity, you can sing for the deity. They look very nice. You can run, do puja, make decorations, do all kinds of things. If you're asleep, really hard to do the puja. Right? Like that. So then all these things, so that's natural. But many don't like to use this definition because they want to say spontaneous devotional service means you're reading about the gopis. Like that. Then it's spontaneous. You know. But then it's just spontaneous there. What about the other activities you do? You know what I'm saying? Then it goes back to rules. But much of the time, if it's spontaneous, you're doing because you like to, then the other things you do if you like to. Then it's not vaidhi, it's not raganuga, it becomes whimsical. That's the danger. So that means it has to be built on the vaidhi being followed. You're following, then you like to do that. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's the generic category of devotional service. You like to serve Krishna. Then, whether you want to serve Krishna as a gopi or a cowherd boy like that, that's a specific, that's a detail. But if the general is not there, how is the detail going to be applied? Does that make sense? That's why, therefore, it's a natural stage in that. So sangha can be spontaneous in different aspects. Right? But also here is that spontaneity is pure devotion. It's not going to be spontaneous in a stage other than pure. Does that make sense? Because below that means it's spontaneous, but then the spontaneity may be connected with your liking to engage the senses in that way rather than Krishna. Does that make sense?
That's the confusion.
Yes, that's the confusion. You bring out the bucket of halava. So is it spontaneous devotional service or is it, you know, attachment to the senses?
The attraction is there.
Yeah, the attraction is there. So that, yeah, the attraction is there. Now whether it's spontaneous in devotion or spontaneous in engaging with the senses. But in any case, you have to admit it's spontaneous. So that's the meaning here. Spontaneous here means that it's in the realm of pure. So that aspect is pure. Maybe other aspects aren't pure devotion. You know what I'm saying? It may be you like to go, in this example, you want to go to the temple, see the deities, this and that. But outside the deity room, let's say you don't deal with Vaishnavas very well. So it may be spontaneous on this aspect, but it's not in the other aspect. You know what I'm saying? So that means it's just starting. Because when it becomes prominent, then that spontaneity will be more throughout. You call that spontaneous devotional service. It means he's on the platform of spontaneous devotional service because spontaneous devotional service is prominent. Right? But it doesn't mean that there's not spontaneity in the area. Like you see someone has all kinds of ideas about cooking and the Sunday program, someone else for programs and, you know, presentations and dramas, someone else on how to arrange the Hari Nam, someone else on nice management arrangements. So many times that's spontaneous in that area, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that spontaneity goes into other aspects of the devotional life. That is back to sadhana. I mean, back to vaidhi. Does that make sense? But when that becomes the prominent, then one is situated in spontaneous devotional service. Does that make sense? But one can be doing aspects of spontaneous before one gets to that stage. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Yes.
Does that mean that when someone is like on the level of always spontaneous, say that they always do all kinds of devotional service?
prominent.
Yeah, it would be more broad, but say it's prominent, so that means still there may be some aspects that are still working according to Vaidhi. But the prominence is there. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. It means like your cheddar and your sari. They both have red. No? Which one's more prominent, red? Yeah, but the sari also has some black in it. But the cheddar has more black. Does that make sense? So that's why one's called brown and one's called. You understand? It's the prominence. It's not that the other elements aren't there.
So one is naturally like a sari.
Means in other words, if they're a pujari and they like doing that all the time and they also deal properly with Vaishnavas and other aspects, then you can say it's on that platform. But if they don't deal properly with Vaishnavas, that's a neophyte mentality. So even though certain aspects of devotional service are, it means the pujari work they're attracted to, but other aspects that are still integral parts, they're not. Because Swadhyaya is study, and then that is Vaishnavas, dealing with Vaishnavas and Tulsi and everything else. Does that make sense? Yeah.
This certain spontaneity is there also before, even before we join the Krishna consciousness. So it can appear sometimes that we are spontaneous in some service.
But that's why we mentioned, brought out the point of pure devotion. Because the point is you can be very spontaneous on something that you're getting a benefit from. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's not pure devotional service, it's mixed. So in here, when they're mentioning it, it's not mentioning any element of mixed. You know, you like to dress the deity because you like clothes and like arranging clothes, and you know what I'm saying? You used to run your own boutique before, so therefore, but it's not pure devotional service, but it's engaging your senses. But when it's more that Krishna looks beautiful rather than your expression of your art, then it becomes spontaneous. Does that make sense? In other words, whimsical is not spontaneous. Just because I feel like it's not spontaneous. I feel like doing what's authorized. That's what's fun, you know. And to do that to please Krishna, that's spontaneous. Because much of the time we can't tell the difference between whimsical and spontaneous, because it says you don't have to follow the rules. So for us, not following the rules is whimsical. So in our idea, whimsical is spontaneous. You know what I'm saying? You know, oh, the person's so regulated, you got to break out of this. Just do something different. You know, that's whimsical. You know what I'm saying? The problem is he does all these things, but just because they're the rules, and that's just the form. But if he does those spontaneously, then you'll say he's, you know, he's very qualified. Does that make sense? Yes.
I misunderstand the statements like doesn't follow the rules very strictly.
Yes. Doesn't follow, because the point is the principle is being followed. So the other means, but why is he, even if the form of it's not so elaborate, he simplified it. But why is he doing that? You know what I'm saying? What it would be doing because of that spontaneous element to please Krishna through it. So he's simplifying it down to just that aspects that can flow very nicely. Someone else may be whimsically cutting it down just because they're lazy. They don't understand it, or they think it's, you know, too much, or like that. So it's not the same. You know, so the focus, they're not thinking I'm cutting down on the rules. They're not thinking, oh, we don't have to do that. They're thinking that this would be nice for Krishna. That's the... You know, it's not that... what was it? I never remember his name. The one Brahmin. He's sitting there with his wife... And the wife's about to hand the bananas to Krishna, and he says, "No, no, we're going spontaneous today. Throw the banana, give Krishna the peel." And she goes, "Yeah, great idea." And then, you know what I'm saying? And Krishna's thinking, "Yeah, everywhere else I go, they give me the banana." You know, so it gets boring after a while. You know, it's like, how many bananas can you eat? You know, but here, I'm getting the peel. You know. Like that. The cows like peels, Krishna likes the cows, the Krishna likes the peels. You know, hey, you know, it works. You know what I'm saying? It's not like that. They're not thinking that I'm leaving the rule. They don't notice it. So the purpose of the rule is being accomplished. The point is get the result of Krishna's pleasure. It's not that it's by not following the rule, because they may follow the rule also. The point is spontaneously they want to please Krishna. But they're not, the point is it's not because of the rule, that's why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want to do it. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Lahiri Mahashai, revered master, kindly ascertain my level of adhikar so that I may understand this principle. I am as of yet unable to comprehend precisely the two concepts of Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti. Vaishnav Das Babaji, you have but to test your own heart to know your level. Do you firmly believe that worshipping and serving the Supreme Lord is possible without strictly following scriptural edicts? Lahiri Mahashai, I feel that when conducted according to scriptural instructions, great benefit from sadhana and bhajan can be gained. However, another view is strongly emerging in my mind, namely that sincere Hari Bhajan opens up an ocean of transcendental rasa. Vaishnav Das Babaji, you see, scriptural injunctions are your supreme command. Hence, you should embrace the path of Vaidhi Bhakti. Gradually, however, the precepts of Raghunuga Bhakti will begin to crystallize further within our consciousness. That makes sense. So, in other words, if the one is there, the other is not. So that's all. So if it's that, it must be that there's this form, and you have to do it like this and this and that. Then it's just a matter of that is Vaidhi. But as you see here, he's able to appreciate that there's something beyond that. So that means it will naturally, by the performance of his sadhana, it will come to the spontaneous platform. But if one feels that, no, this is all there is, and there is nothing beyond this, right? And if someone brings up Raghunuga Sadhana and you freak out, you know, oh, that's nonsense, you won't get there. It's not going to happen. Not at least in the conditioned state, right? Then when one gets to the liberated state, one will have a different view, right? There won't be biases. So then one will be able to take up Raghunuga. Does that make sense? But the point is that he's based on that he does everything very nicely, therefore it's there. Right? But the prominence is there. The other one is a glimmer. Right? When the other is the prominence and the other is less, then it takes on that form. But that's why Rupa Goswami is mentioning that the spontaneous devotional service, or the Raghunuga, it's manifest in its full state. In Baba, right? When you're liberated, that's the full state that you can manifest in. But you have a manifestation of it to some degree already in the Madhyam platform, right? Can have, not necessarily, but can have.
Like from Nishtha?
Yeah, from Nishtha. Means it could, whenever it comes, you know, like that, Nishtha could be there, most likely be more prominent at Ruchi. Like that. But the point is that it can be, but it can't be its full manifestation until Baba. Because then you do have your spiritual form, you are in that environment of spontaneous devotional service. So then you're a Rag Anuga, you're following the footsteps of those with Rag. Right? So does that make sense? Begin by seriously chanting Hari Nam. Amongst the different limbs of bhajan, chanting is the most efficacious. Right? Okay. Harinam and the proprietor of Harinam are one and the same person. Chanting without committing offenses will quickly lead one to complete perfection. Take up chanting with full faith. Lahiri Maharshai, O Master, I am eager to begin. Please shower me with your mercy. Vaishnav Das Babaji, Dear Sir, please always repeat the following mantra without offense. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As Vaishnav Das Babaji uttered this, the Maha Mantra, he gently pressed a set of chanting beads made of tulsi wood into the hand of Lahiri Mahashai. Right? Then, when the latter began to chant the Maha Mantra on his new beads, he felt tears of jubilation streak down his face. He exulted, Prabhu, I am unable to express the joy that I feel, and collapsed at Babaji's feet.
That's good.
Yeah. And he's a Vaidhi Sadhaka.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's that. Then he's given beads there of tulsi that have been chanted by the spiritual master. So this is then that connection. So this is the how you say, it's technically the aspect of the nam guru, like that. So it's part of the siksha process. Like that. Carefully, Vaishnav Das Babaji lifted him up and held him steady. After a period of stunned silence, Lahiri Maharshai said, "I am indeed blessed. I have never before experienced such exhilaration." Right? Because the point is it's being done with full faith and with avoiding offenses. So if it's done with full faith and avoiding offenses, then you get this kind of results. Or not getting this kind of results, then either faith is less or offenses are there. Or both. Vaishnav Das Babaji. Revered sir, truly you are blessed. You have sincerely taken shelter of Harinam. Thus you have showered great fortune upon me also. Because right? Then you have such nice association. The point is devotee, so it's always good. Lahiri Maharshai returned to his cottage. Having received initiation, he started chanting Harinam upon his new beads, pushing aside all fears and doubts. Days went by in chanting, and Lahiri Maharshai began to decorate his body with the Vaishnav Tilak markings in the customary 12 places. He refused to eat anything other than prasadam, food offered to the Lord, and steadily increased his daily chanting up to 2 lakhs. Maybe that's the problem. He offered prostrated obeisances to pure Vaishnavas as soon as he saw them. Another problem. He would begin his daily routine by first offering worship to Paramahamsa Prem Das Babaji, and then he would serve as spiritual master, Sri Vaishnav Das Babaji, right? Because Paramaguru is there. So if Paramaguru is there, then he is respected. Then the Guru. Sri Vaishnav Das constantly and diligently. So constantly means he's always respecting, in other words, thinking of their instructions and if they're there interacting properly and everything. So that constantly one's remembering the order of the Guru, so constantly one's chanting with that faith and trying to avoid offenses. He lost all interest in trivial talks, another problem,
yeah.
As well as classical music. It means you would call like the elevator music that's classical rock, you know, that kind of thing.
In broad terms.
Yeah. I mean classic means it's purely means it's classic grunge, right? You know, so there, yeah, okay. Thus a metamorphosis took place in Lahiri Maharshai. He was now a devotee. He was now a Vaishnava. It's a problem with English, right? I think in the old, it means if you go back, it's archaic, but they would use, he was now an Vaishnava, because then you don't get the problem.
Mm. Mm.
But it's not used these days, so now you end up with this problem of a Vaishnava. I guess you could say a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava. Okay, so he gave up, mundane music. Right, because it's not that he's going to be listening to Elvis or something, right? It's from, at this time, there's classical music, and then there's the devotional music. So didn't have interest in mundane music, in mundane talks. He was respectful to the Vaishnavas. He was respectful to his gurus. He was always remembering their order. He had faith in the holy name. He's avoiding offenses. Right? So that then makes the initiation process successful.
He ate only prasadam.
He ate only prasadam, yes. Yes, of course. Prabhupada, don't do that one, right? You know, the devotee was saying the four regular principles, you've got to remember three. So then the fourth one, don't do that one. That's the one you forget, right? So that's the one you have to watch out for. One day, Lahiri Mahashaya approached Vaishnav Das Babaji, prostrated himself humbly and inquired, "O Master, what is the prayojana tattva, the principle of the ultimate spiritual goal and necessity?" Right, so ultimate spiritual goal, but also notice here it uses the word necessity. That's why sometimes we become confused that desire, we take it as prayojana. It's my desire, but it's only if it's a necessity it's a goal. You have so many desires, but you only endeavor for what you need. You understand? So when the desire increases to a necessity, you endeavor for it. So that's why this term is used. You know, the spiritual, ultimate spiritual goal and ultimate necessity. Right? So the ultimate necessity is Krishna consciousness. Right? Because remember last year when in the section, the Prayojana section, and Prabhupada in studying Gita from the perspective of Prayojana, he gave the ultimate necessity. Right? So that's important to see like that. Otherwise you just think the ultimate goal, okay, yes, it's there. But then there's what I need. No, it has to be what you need has to be in connection with Krishna consciousness. Then that becomes prayojana. Otherwise it's a prayojana in the small circles that, you know, I need this, so I go there and get that. But then now that I have that, now what? What's this connection to Krishna? Or what's the next stage, what I'm going to do now that I have that? Vaishnava Das Babaji. Krishna prema is the prayojana tattva for the jiva. Constant sadhana and devotional service leads to bhava. When bhava matures, so constant. So that's the point, is that Krishna says that when constantly performing devotional doesn't fall down, that will bring one to bhava. Right? Does that make sense? Because the fallen state is not so good for bhava. Right? You know what I'm saying? It didn't work for Bharat Maharaj. If it doesn't work for him, it's not going to work for us. Right? So, in other words, constant is what is there, because that's what bhava is dealing with, is the absorption in Krishna. You're trying to bring the point of constant. Then once it's constant, then you're deepening it until it becomes samadhi. Right? In other words, you're once remembering Krishna, you know, occasionally, then more regularly, then always. But then still that's not enough. Then that has to be deepened, and then samadhi. Right? That's the state on which now prema can be developed. Right? So that's why this constant element is important. Otherwise, bhava can't be maintained. Yes?
Steady and constant? I mean, nista and constant. Is nista constant?
Yeah, it's the same. Just means it's always going on. So nista means it's regular. It's because anishta means sometimes you're performing nicely, sometimes you're not. Does that make sense? Yeah. When bhava matures, it is called prema. Krishna prema is the eternal occupation of the jiva, his eternal opulence, his source of supreme joy, and his absolute necessity. It means he can't function outside of that. Right? Now we think something else is a necessity. That's why we're not so in anxiety that we're not on the platform of prema. Right? You know, we go on all day and don't worry about it, right? We're not going and lamenting to the others, yes.
He's talking about dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Occupation, artha is the opulence, joy is the kama, necessity.
Yeah. Or you could even reverse those two. Yeah, necessity means the nature, and the joy means the liberation. You get from both. Yeah, nice. So in other words, the prema is the fifth. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. So all these others then are, yeah, means devotional service being that's the real thing. Your real opulence is devotional service. The real source of supreme joy is devotional service. Otherwise, we think it's something else. A real occupation, a real need, because we'll think, I'm a Brahmin, I have to do these things, and it's my need. But no, it's actually devotional service is the real need. Right? And the occupation, I'm doing this to make money. But no, we're engaged in occupation to develop love for Krishna. Right? You need the money to pay for the facilities that you use in Krishna's service. Okay. Yes. The absence of prema results in the sufferings of the jiva, because dharma, artha, kama, and moksha won't actually make the living entity happy. But that's all anybody's ever endeavoring for, right? The absence of prema results in the suffering of the jiva, material entanglement and attachment to matter. Nothing is superior to prema, and Sri Krishna, the embodiment of transcendental absolute truth, is subdued by prema alone. Ananda, spiritual bliss, when intensified and condensed, turns into prema, the essence. That's why the ananda, the spiritual bliss, is not enough. So that the platform of Brahmananda, where one's on the spiritual platform, and that happiness of just being spiritually situated, that's not enough. Or just the kirtan is nice and that bliss of that, that's not enough. Right? It has to be condensed into where it's always absorbed and focused on Krishna. Because otherwise we're taking advantage of the happiness coming from the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? So that itself technically is material. Though it's the most superior form, you know what I'm saying? It is spiritual, but the point is trying to enjoy the spiritual has that touch of the material element.
So that would be connected to Chatur's Loki. I would see the separate of Krishna in that sense. My perception would be material. Even though the Brahmajyoti is spiritual, but it has
separate of Krishna. That's why also when we say pure unalloyed devotion, because Vaikuntha, that's pure devotion. It's only focused on Krishna. But the happiness they gain from it is also, you know, very much part of the scene. You know, they're so happy in that devotional spirit. In pure unalloyed, you're not worried about your happiness. Right? But at the same time, it's because of that, the happiness experience is so much greater. Does that make sense? But it means we may not like that, but that's just the way energy works. You know, it means its point is this: you can't have the cake and you can't eat the cake. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. You can't get so you can't be absorbed in that ananda and actually be that ananda's being presently experienced. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty. So the absorption always in the service, that prema, it's something else. That's why I'm saying it's beyond. That's why it's not talked about so much. Because like here, we see that, you know, Sambandha took up many, many pages. Abhideya then basically in two pages. And now Prayojan in one paragraph. Because that's all the more has to be said. Because it's not like there's a lot we can do with it, other than know that's what we're trying to get to. Yes?
Then on which level are the inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka? They are on prema.
They're on prema. But not pure unalloyed. You know what I'm saying?
So it's like another level in prema bhakti, like divided also.
It means you have bhava as the first stage, then you have prema as the second stage. Right? Then above that you have eight more stages. Right? So that requires the spontaneity. Right? So in Vaikuntha, the only is only prema. But that's the perfect platform of the living entity, so it's perfect. But it's just that there's more beyond that. In other words, they control Krishna by their love, but these higher levels control Krishna more. Right? Because in the other one, he's God, so therefore everything's going nicely, everyone follows the rules. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's Raghunath Das is saying, don't get attracted by these things. You know what I'm saying? So that answers your third acharya. Does that make sense?
What about discussing Krishna and Radharani's marriage? Is there a risk that...
Krishna's and Radharani's marriage. How are you discussing this marriage?
There was a play at school in the temple, and someone was saying that might lead to Vaikuntha rather than some will come.
No, the point is how is it being discussed?
Just presented as a play.
That's there, but my point is that what's the discussion about the marriage? You know what I'm saying? Okay. In other words, their pastimes, the conjugal pastime is going on, that parakia is going on, and for fun they have a marriage as one of the things that they do. Right? They can sit on the swing, they can walk in the six season garden, they can swim in Radhakund, they can, sit and eat something, they can listen to the parrots talking, they can have a marriage ceremony. Or is the marriage ceremony the prominent thing that, Radha and Krishna are together, they're married, and they, that okay. You understand? That's it's the context.
Okay.
In other words, that's there so that those who can't accommodate the parakiya rasa can see that it's just a pastime. They're actually married, but they're playing as if they're not. You understand? It's like Louis XIV and his wives and close associates. He's king of France. It's not a discussion, right? But they used to like dressing up as cowherds and going out into their lawns and playing as if they're just ordinary people. Does that make sense? But there's no question he's not the king. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So you have to see which is the prominent. So for those people who can only appreciate Krishna, as the supreme, as the Lord, then that means he does everything right, so he wouldn't do anything immoral. So actually, Radha and Krishna return in marriage because he's the supreme Shaktiman and she's the supreme Shakti. So actually they're even on that platform, that's their, you can't separate them. And besides that, there's this pastime, so many pastimes where they get married. It's a regular thing that they do for fun. Like, you know what I'm saying? The little girls go up into the attic, right? And they get out their Barbie dolls and this and that and find things that, their parents and stuff like that. How often do they have a wedding? Right? Every day, right? So it's like, but it's just part of the fun. Does that make sense? So it's something that happens. It's not so often, but it happens. Because for the marriage to happen there, then means everything has to be very submissive and very, according to everything, very pleasant. Right? So that's very right wing. You understand? So with a group of left wing girls, that moment's going to be rare. So such a pastime wouldn't be performed very often. Does that make sense? Okay. Lahiri Mahashai, choking with tears, asked, "Will I ever be eligible to experience prema?" Vaishnav Das Babaji, firmly embracing him, responded, "Behold, in a matter of days you have elevated yourself from sadhana to bhava bhakti. Sri Krishna will soon benedict you further." So if you follow the process nicely, it works very quickly. If you don't follow it so nicely, it takes a little longer. These utterances from his guru had a magical effect upon Lahiri Mahashai. He began to roll in the dust in joy and exclaimed, "Ah, nothing can surpass the guru in importance. Alas, how foolishly I have wasted so much of my life. My guru has lifted me out of the dark well of materialism by his unlimited mercy." Right? So if we drop this position of guru down to some level of duality, whether he should be worshipped or not, whether you can take him out of your locker or not, if someone else sees him, will you be turned into a little pile of ashes? Can we give him a donation, or will he become too puffed up so we don't want to do that? All these different concepts are there. It drops down the position of guru. And so because of that, then these activities don't have that much effect. Does that make sense? So it's a package. They go together. It's not that, we like the aspect that everything can be engaged in service, so therefore, let's focus on the management part. But all this guru stuff and the Vaishnava etiquette and giving and charity and the chanting, so much emphasis on that, especially Harinam, all these things that we won't worry about like that. Does that make sense? So that becomes reduced down, but then we're going to experience, Baba. It's not going to happen. It goes together. It's a package. That's why it said, is that it's not that the sadhana is creating it. The sadhana, the opportunities to awaken. So if you don't follow those opportunities to awaken, how is it going to happen? Right? Does that make sense? If you're hungry, food satisfies the hunger. But if you're not around food, how are you going to satisfy your hunger? That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
So it seems that in this example, he was chanting Tulak of Mantra. Means he was fully engaged by his guru by chanting or by offering obeisances or wishing to Lassi.
Yes. Point is to be fully engaged. See, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he made the point that the neophytes, then they can only see chanting japa as Harinam. But doing activities that support Harinam is also Harinam. So that's why he was having his devotees, if they were temple devotees, just did the puja and like that, they had to do a lakh a day. But if they were involved in the preaching and going out, they did 16 rounds, right? Because then some would say, but they're not doing a lakh of rounds. And Lord Chaitanya, if you don't do a lakh of rounds, you're fallen. But the point is that what he's making is that they are doing a lakh of rounds, but they're not doing it in a form you appreciate, right? They're working on the press, they're making the temple, people are coming, they're preaching to them, they're doing all the different things. All that's part of holding, because Krishna and his name are non-different, so therefore it's all part of the thing. So you're worshiping the deity. That's also you're associating with Krishna, or you're preaching. You're associating with Krishna. You're doing something with the books. You're associating with Krishna. So that's why if you only chant 16 rounds and do nothing else, you still also won't advance that much. But you do 16 rounds and service, then you'll find it works very nicely. Does that make sense? So it's important to be engaged in service. Right? It means here you get 1,000 times the benefit anyway. You know what I'm saying? But now you can imagine if you're also engaged in service, then how much quicker it goes.
2,000 lakhs of rounds.
Yes. Like that. Yeah, so everything just increases very greatly. That's the advantage. So he's given very simply here those different elements. See if we can go through them again, not leave anything out, right? Okay, having that full faith in the process, in Krishna and in the name, right? Chanting without offense, right? Having taking shelter of the instruction of the spiritual master, following the instructions, right? Trying to apply them into one's life, right? Respecting the Vaishnavas, right? Worshipping the guru and parampara. Then
avoiding talk.
Avoiding mundane talk, avoiding mundane music, and taking prasad. Only taking prasad. Right? Almost lost it again. Okay. Does that make sense? So these activities being done, focused on that, and you can see is in our program, these are the prominent elements. Like to us, it's not like, what was that list again? This area, when it comes to essence of devotional service, Prabhupada's given it. We don't actually realize how excellent the program. You take the Pancharatrik program, the essential points of it are in our daily program. Right? And the essential elements of the Bhagavad is in our program. So that's why it's such a successful program. Right? Does that make sense? We use it, it works for us. Anybody else joins it, it works for them. It works anywhere in the world. Why? Because it's the essence of the Bhagavat and the Pancharatra, the two transcendental processes. And then if anybody else wants to be successful, they have to use our process. Because the other processes didn't work as well. They weren't as complete. Their emphasis becomes on. So we see if we drop any of these, right? The faith in the name, the avoiding offenses, the respect of the devotees, right? Avoiding mundane talk, avoiding mundane music, avoiding non-prasad, right? Avoiding worship of guru in respect of the parampara. Then everything goes down. You follow it, it naturally happens. So, okay. Yes,
in this case, like in Vaishnava, before becoming a Vaishnava, they both of them were very sincere.
Yes, both were sincere. In other words, they were both properly practicing Brahmins, one in more in the Karmakanda and one more in the Jnanakanda. Or possibly Upasanakanda. But in any case, the point was is they were following the Vedic rules very nicely. They were very sincere about them, so they were very pious and very elevated. That's why it's recommended to follow the Brahminical lifestyle, because it's an advantage. You see, it worked for them very nicely. But it's not that that's what's going to make devotional service. It means if sadhana bhakti, the practices of sadhana bhakti aren't actually what's going to create the devotion, why would something below that, the Vedic sadhana, create it? Right? But the one is very, means it's the social system and practices and perspective that is most useful in devotional service, and then there's the practices that are most dynamic in evoking love of God. Right? In other words, the best pious situation to perform your service in and the best activities to evoke love of God. That's what's being recommended. Right? So that's why the Brahminical lifestyle and sadhana bhakti. Right? But without understanding it's prema, that's what you're trying to get to. That even that doesn't have, even that won't be advantageous. Right? So that sincerity is required. Right? And we have to be very careful about whimsically giving up things that are useful. Right? In other words, if yukta vairagya is there, this is also something that can be yuktaed. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is due to our lack of vairagya, we don't want to yukta Vedic things, we only want to yukta Western things. Why? Because we're attached to those. So we should just say yukta, not vairagya. Or yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that works. Yeah. So, yeah. I guess it works out in the, if you see the bigger picture. Okay, so we'll end here. Finished another chapter.
Jai.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Today's what? Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, okay, so Thursday we'll start the evening class again.
Yes.
Right? We'll continue with the
model.
Yes.